realized how fucked a situation this might turn out to be. But his mind stayed sharp, considering the offer. As it was, it truly was fair, and he needed more money now to start the engine.
All right, I accept. I can only provide you with around 20 right now. I'll have to speak with the engraver for more. Do you have,
Claptrap hesitated.
Armor preferences?
Artisan Dway considered.
No, I think not. However, it might be easier if we keep them separate. For example, dragonfly on bracers, fish on boots, bear on breastplates.
They hammered out the additional details, and Artisan Dway took the bracers Claptrap had in exchange for almost 400 silver. After the artisan left, Claptrap looked down in wonder at the money.
Maybe,
he whispered to himself and to the stars above.
There really is hope. I'll see you again, Ciel.
His disciple considered lack of attributes his main weakness, which earned him points in Charles' book, if only because the foolish kid had an answer ready for the sudden question. However, Shaul did not share that opinion. His approach was more holistic. After hours of working randomly through a series of physical tasks designed to break down arrogant recruits, Shaul considered his disciple with a neutral attitude.
You are not as weak as I imagined.
The foolish disciple grinned at him. It had been a long night of exercises and sparring, pushing the newest member of the Spear Phantom style until he gave out. In strength, speed, and endurance, he continued to display flexibility and poise, adjusting to new challenges with an alacrity that surprised Shaul. In the end, it only made him sigh.
No, you short-sighted youngling. Your strength bodes ill for your chances in the tournament. There are things we need to discuss.
Shaul sat down, making himself comfortable. His disciple remained on the ground, his clothes sticking to his body from the sweat, his eyes alive and focused. That, too, surprised Shaul. No matter how physically exhausted the boy should be, he always had one more spark to meet a new challenge. Shaul's misgivings only grew. He gave the boy a frank look.
You still have not obtained a class, and you maintain your coherency, even without using liquid life?
The boy's body stilled. Apparently he understood some of the issues related to this, but he nodded slowly, confirming Shaul's fears. Shaul sat back, mulling it over for a long time, which meant there was always the option of getting a class. Originally, Shaul assumed the boy had chosen this avenue of satisfying the obligations of the Spear Phantom style for glory in the tournament, but perhaps it was just because all the others required a class.
When you told me previously, I honestly didn't believe you. I thought, well, it matters not. But your lack of a class and your strength poses a problem.
His disciple frowned. Why?
Ah, I am being broad. Your stats, boy. Until today, I hadn't realized until I watched you closely. Much of your strength comes from your high stats. I had been assuming you were relying on high skill levels to match those who had leveled to around 20, but your stats rival theirs. Perhaps the total even surpasses them, considering you have skill in magic as well.
Shaul sighed again.
We could have made plans to cover for lack of stats, but they are your strength. Your weakness is your skill levels. What level is your spear mastery?
After a foolish hesitation, his disciple answered,
79. Mine sits at 302, Shaul said shortly. In this tournament, it will be strange for one skill to not be at 130. And that is just the general. The specific skills will be polished to an even higher level. You simply do not have the time to make this up without the time dilation of a dungeon. The top eight? No, perhaps even the preliminaries. will be impossible for you.
Chapter 55. Randidly frowned, but said nothing. Previously, he had the strange impression that Shaw's skill level was closer to his current skill level, but perhaps he was mistaken. He didn't like what he was hearing. If all of his opponent's skill levels were over 100, it was a sobering thought. And considering how much difficulty Randidly had at overcoming those vibrating spears of Tartet, even though he used haste, empower, and mana strengthening in addition to the actual skill, if what Shaw was saying was correct, and his stats were also slightly above his opposition here, and would only be on par with those in the regional tournament, Randidly shivered. That kind of difference in skill was intimidating. He supposed the only reason he had a shot was due to the varied nature of his magics. He suspected that many were like him and left resistance as a stat that did not receive very much attention. Shaul appeared to be brooding in silence, so Randidly asked, "Is there any hope then? Couldn't a classer just train in a dungeon for an extremely long time before the tournament? Years even, while still staying below level 25?
In theory, it is possible, but in practice, few do. To suppress one's strength overmuch is wasteful and rather pointless. These requirements do not come into force very often, only every 5 years. That is enough time for only 5 generations of the best and brightest to become the youngest of the style. As for those who are aware they must compete at a certain level due to timing, most fear dungeon poisoning and would not risk it overmuch. It is not safe to rely on the time dilation for too long."
"Dungeon poisoning?" Shaw gestured dismissively.
"A word for a body grown fat on ether before returning to the thinness of our current world. The concentration of ether is naturally higher in a dungeon, almost 5 times as so. While in a dungeon, the time dilation causes your connection to your village's ether to be tenuous, but you suffer no backlash as you absorb more from the air, increasing your growth anyway. Then, as you require it less, the ether connection to your village wanes further. It will never be destroyed completely, but if your body is too reliant on ambient ether, and you leave the dungeon, you can expect to be bedridden for months, until ether connection to your village grows strong enough to support you once more."
For a split second, Shaw's lip curled upward.
"Many desperate forsaken, those that previously possessed power and have fallen on hard times, sometimes make this choice. They go into dungeons without the intent of ever coming out."
Struck by a sudden thought, Shaw frowned at Randidly.
"In fact, I feared you would suffer dungeon poisoning when you escaped back to your world after our meeting, for you have no class. But I believed that the ether reward would sustain you long enough for you to find and gain a class and develop a healthy source. The fact that you have continued this far with such strength is confusing."
He shook his head.
"I do not begrudge you your secrets. Go, you may do what you will until lunch. At that time, we will train again until dusk. I must do some investigations. We cannot rely on ordinary means if we expect to turn you into a passable disciple."
Randidly ignored the insult and asked, "Before I go, is there any information available on patrons?" Shaw paused, then looked him up and down.
"I had not thought of this. Yes. Develtian tells me you have a merchant friend, yes? Consult him. There are some widely accepted patrons that have passable trials for their initiates. Patrons are a useful boost in power, especially to one such as you, who incorporates magic."
Then Shaw left, and almost inexplicably, Randidly bowed at his departing back. Shaw truly was an impressive spear user, and had a knack for pointing out the flaws in Randidly's form that was surprising, considering his blunt communication style.
"Well, perhaps that was exactly why he's so talented at it, and his monstrous skill level is why he knows so much."
Although the training he had done with Mrs. Hamilton had been effective, it was hard to say whether it was the training style or the shift in perspective that enabled Randidly's sudden growth, and that growth likely wouldn't have been sustainable.
The first levels were always the easiest to get in any skill. Meanwhile, Shaw was a well-honed machine that served one particular purpose, fighting with a spear. If anyone could give Randidly a chance in this tournament, it would be him. It was good he would be able to obtain more information about patrons. If he ever returned to Donnyton, when he returned to Donnyton, it would be incredibly useful for the people who reached the apprentice path. Randidly wasn't really in the need of advice on which patrons were good to choose, obviously, but rather he wanted to know the way the path progressed. If the path he had was normal, that would be fine. But if it was one that resulted in him being teleported to that strange world again... Randidly blinked. Speaking of Donnyton, Randidly opened his friend's menu and sent a message to Lyra. No lingering issues with Donnyton? Lyra. None. Everyone is settling into their new roles splendidly. Randidly rubbed his chin. That line about roles gave him pause. He didn't think Lyra would lie to him. And considering he heard from Mrs. Hamilton and Sam that the issue was resolved successfully... Lyra. Why? Did someone say something? Lyra's sudden message gave Randidly pause. It was clear she was hiding something. He clicked to open Mrs. Hamilton's window to send a message to her, but hesitated. After several seconds, he released an explosive sigh and shook his head. No, I need to trust her. She might be hiding something, but it's likely personal. Maybe she just got injured and doesn't want me to think she's weak. With that reassuring thought, Randidly pulled out the mysterious black potion. His fingers tightened around the bottle. Not getting information via the system might save him in certain, very specific situations, like when he earned a sneak level in front of the deadly web spinner, but the notifications were more distracting than anything else. During the fight against Tartet and Dian, a significant portion of his focus had gone to whether he was gaining poison resistance. He would have been better served by simply fighting. With all well in Donnyton, he raised the potion and tipped it back. Besides, I can take doses sporadically, so the effect fades, just in case Donnyton's delegation discovers anything about Ace and Sydney. Randidly walked up to the deck, intending to visit Claptrap, and what he found gave him pause. The two female spear users who tested him in the belly of the tassel shop were on the deck as well, meditating. Most of the other boats had unhooked their moorings and were drifting away, and there was a path of choppy orange water, towards which their boats slowly floated. Curiously, there were two other figures on the boat, their heads to the deck in some strange sort of prayer stance of genuflection. They also looked oddly familiar. Above them, Randidly's emerald tassel flapped dazzlingly next to the sky blue of Shawl's. He turned to Divot and asked, What's going on? The boat's moving? Divot snorted.
Yes. Not only was your performance too eye-catching, it also revealed Shaw's presence here. With the boat now flying both of your tassels, well, most would give way and let us move closer to the heart of Catal, as is our prerogative. But it also brings more attention.
Divot nodded towards the genuflecting figures. Randidly turned.
And who are these people?
Almost as if they had both been waiting for this opportunity, both smoothly stood, one male, one female. The female had long brown hair, braided and curled down her back. She was, Randidly couldn't help but notice, extremely lovely. A less righteous part of him wondered how good with a spear she could really be with hips as well endowed as that, but quickly squashed that line of thought. She was, Randidly thought, in his second and more relevant realization, the woman who carried that fool's body off the stage during the fight. Randidly spared the male a glance, then a longer, more serious look as he watched him open his mouth.
I'm glad you asked. The male said, with a smug look, raising his gem-studded spear, freshly cleaned of his vomit. I am the greatest talent the heavy iron spear style has seen in generations. My name is...
No, Randidly interrupted, wanting to cut him off before he began running his mouth.
I guess
I really meant, why are you here?
Sir, this one humbly requests that this one receive the honor of being your spear attendant,
the female said, bowing again. She hid her features behind her thick braid. The male chuckled evilly and spoke haughtily, all the while bowing even lower than the female, his nose practically brushing the ground as he spoke.
Kneel and accept my honorable generosity. I, too, will be the best spear attendant possible. No need to thank me, for I...
Is this normal?
Randomly asked Divot as he pointed to them. Divot chuckled.
Their personalities? Perhaps not. But yes, spear users that have acknowledged their own limits and don't have much room for upward mobility in their own style will attach themselves to talented individuals as subordinates. It is a yearly commitment for them, but you may terminate the relationship at any time. You don't really need to do much for them. They are effectively indenturing themselves to you in order to hitch themselves to your social status. It is still a bit early, I think, for someone like you to have spear attendants, in terms of strength, but...
Shrugging, Divot closed his eyes and returned to meditating. Randomly just scratched his head, hesitating for a few reasons.
It's definitely not because of the woman's looks,
Randomly assured himself, eyeing her bowing form briefly. Then he shook his head. If he was to up the training with Shawl, it would be hard for him to venture away from the boat very often, and that was assuming they remained here for the training. Plus, he wanted to continue his potion experiments and to fund what he needed to engrave, and both of those were rather time-consuming activities. It might be worth it to have these two as spear attendants, especially if he didn't really need to do anything. But did he really need them both? Randomly looked at them again, and the woman straightened, but still kept her face lowered. Randomly focused on the male, who remained hunched over in his bowed position, refusing to move. He took in his posture, the slight tremble to his body, and the white-knuckled grip on his spear. A drop of water traced down his brow and dripped onto the deck with an audible plop. Randomly closed his eyes.
Probably just sweat, huh?
Randomly whispered, then shook his head. It was a little embarrassing how emotional he'd gotten since becoming involved in Donnyton. Before, he had been... Well, he had been like a ghost, without a personality, walking through life. He was changing, finding his own path. He was still emotionally withdrawn, but he was starting to connect more with the people around him. More importantly, though, people were growing to value him. It was a strange feeling to have others dependent on him. First Donnyton, and now these two. Strangely, for the first time, Randomly was truly thankful for the system and the changes it brought to his life.
All right. I accept. Is there a ritual or a form we have to sign?
Chapter 56.
Claptrap spent most of the morning using the money he received from Artisan Dway to purchase leather bracers, steel boots, and iron breastplates. He was able to cash in some of his other armors and use the rest of his savings and got 200 of each, which would be a solid start to satisfying the crashing wave style. He returned to his boat, only to be flummoxed by a simple truth. Claptrap had no idea how to contact the ghost hound. He opened his friends list and began to scroll through the previously met tab, but because Catal was such a densely packed city, and he had also just been at the market, at the most well-attended event in the last month, finding the ghost hound was almost impossible. There simply was no way to track him down. He would probably have a few days, but eventually Artisan Dway would return. At that time, if he didn't have any finished armor to give him, Claptrap shivered. Although the other seemed like a personally reasonable person, you didn't become an artisan by being soft. In the meantime, Claptrap needed to... There was a knock on the door to his cab. Opening the wooden door, he found three individuals standing there.
Yo,
the ghost hound said, rubbing the back of his neck.
Claptrap almost burst into tears. Then he refocused and launched into a rapid explanation of everything that happened with the crashing wave style, and how he may have revealed the ghost hound's engraving, which might possibly get back to the guilds, who would then come out to find him, how this might all lead to them tortured in a dark place far away. As he finished, breathing heavily, he had the chance to look around. What Claptrap saw caused his eyelids to twitch slightly.
These two are trustworthy, right?
He said, gesturing towards the shapely woman and the angry man who was opening his mouth. The ghost hound snorted, cutting him off.
A little late for that, isn't it? Don't worry about it. More importantly, they said they would buy as many as I could make.
Interesting.
What's the price?
Claptrap's face fell. He couldn't forget the ghost hound's incisive questioning that slowly stripped away Claptrap's bargaining power. Even now, although the question sounded innocent, he felt the possible profits fleeing away from him.
The price is dependent on the quality of the engraving. At certain levels,
the ghost hound held up a hand, then gestured to the woman.
What's your name?
She bowed, her lovely brown hair cascading forward to cover her face. Her voice was soft and sweet.
It is Helen.
Helen, handle the details of this transaction. You'll probably be doing this a lot for me in the future, so good luck.
The woman seemed too tense to Claptrap's eyes, and what followed was a very awkward series of bargaining between the two of them, while the ghost hound and the other spear attendant watched. After a few minutes, the ghost hound sat down and began to engrave right there, working while they hammered out the details of the deal, and things began to go smoother. Although Helen was very savvy, she lacked the sinister and unrelenting quality that allowed the ghost hound to ask seemingly innocuous questions and still have Claptrap's confidence in his price plummet. There was just a calculating way that he had, making him impossible to fool. It was much less stressful for Claptrap to negotiate with Helen, but he sensed that for her, she was sweating bullets. After all, if she failed at obtaining a good deal. Luckily, she seemed well-versed in the subject. So much so, they started talking more exacting details on the quality of the workmanship, turnover times, and cost-sharing. But then the ghost hound spoke, interrupting them both. Right before, Claptrap was willing to accept a deal that would have earned him enough of the profits.
Oh, Claptrap, the man said, standing and smiling at him. Just one quick question.
Inwardly, Claptrap began making calculations, trying to parse out how much lower he could go and still respect himself. There was definitely money to be made here, but if the ghost hound insisted on keeping it all to himself, there really was nothing that Claptrap could do. But when the question was finally asked, Claptrap was left completely bewildered.
Do you have any information on patrons?
Yes, Claptrap stuttered. Would you like the general risk sheet or the detailed?
The ghost hound simply glanced at Helen. His mouth twisted into a frown. She seemed to hesitate for several long seconds, torn between two options very near to each other. But after a time, she settled on her answer and said,
We will take it all. Perhaps you can throw it into our previous discussions, and we will call it a day?
After another quick round of mental mathematics, Claptrap nodded, and he shook hands with Helen. The ghost hound turned to leave, then paused, and pulled a long streamer out of his ring.
Oh, here. I heard that if I wanted to show my support, I should give you this. Just hang it wherever, I guess.
And with that, the ghost hound took the armors to be engraved and left, leaving a very confused Claptrap holding the streamer. And when he looked down to examine it, finally noticing its color, his confusion only grew. This color. He recognized this color. The color of the great shame of the Spearman School. Why would he? Was he possibly connected to that woman all those years ago? As his eyes ran over the gold lettering and the incredibly large and bold Ghost Hound across the streamer, his eyes landed on the style affiliation. It wasn't one Claptrap immediately recognized, but it seemed strangely familiar to him. The Spear Phantom style, huh? Why did that seem so familiar?
Making a mental note to research it more later, Claptrap pushed those thoughts out of his mind. Instead, he began to consider how to proceed with his purchases. Although Izzat had been silent for a single day, if Claptrap continued to make such mass purchases, he would eventually surface, looking for a slice of the pie. If he couldn't get that. Better to start planning now. Claptrap breathed in and out, picturing Ciel's shy smile. He was not a particularly bold man, but neither was he a scared one. He had always lived his life simply because he was content. A few months ago, he found a goal and flailed out, searching for a hope. Just when he thought it was impossible, hope came flickering into his field of view. But now, more things followed, including the cold threat of steel. Claptrap smiled and began to hum. For Ciel, he would break this entire world. Let them come. Then he shook his head ruefully. Confidence and madness were one thing, but how was he going to handle it? Randidly set the last scroll down, his mouth twisted into a grin. The information provided by Claptrap had been a rating sheet listing the relative risks of several of the most common patrons, a guide detailing the training sequence of some common patrons, and finally an encyclopedia listing all of the known patrons and some background information. Patron of Ash wasn't included on the risk sheet, which was initially confusing to Randidly, but his reading in the encyclopedia helped him understand. It was unclear what patrons were, but it was clear that different worlds had access to different patrons, perhaps once more due to their perspective on the subject. There were dozens of varieties of fire patrons, but there was only one patron of Ash, which was addressed in a fairly large section, explaining some history and sightings of the patron and some notable initiates of Ash. From the guide materials, Randidly learned there were three levels given to people who take the apprentice path: initiate, anointed, and chosen. These labels were related to how far along in the apprenticeship a person progressed. All patrons had three requirements, each name signifying how many requirements an individual had passed. The Patron of Ash encyclopedia entry stated that at one point, initiates of Ash were fairly common. There were even some anointed of Ash, but there had never been a chosen of Ash, and many anointed chose never to advance through the third path, giving them access to the third challenge, although they would not speak of why. Perhaps it was simply the failures of their predecessors. But the book described how many speculated there was more to it than that. There was a certain set to the eyes of the anointed that made the writers suspicious. Of course, this was only speculation, and for now, Randidly had no proof. There was a small relief. It was clear from the texts that only the first and third challenges would teleport you to the world of the patron. The second challenge was one that needed to be accomplished where you were. Randidly decided he would soon try for the initiate of Ash path. Before that, he needed to get through this strange, seemingly bugged path. Randidly had seen a lot of things about the Nexus and its system that made him think it was a programmed system of some strange, extremely esoteric energy language, but the more he experienced, the more suspicious he was of whether that was all there was to it. The lonesome spear path made him dubious. And those fingers. One step at a time, ever onward, never stopping, always advancing. And eventually, Randidly knew he would find the answer naturally. But right now, being here among these individuals who trained since birth under the system, where his strength was only that of a level 15 individual, and where his skill level was so far below his peers, Randidly was still shocked at Shawl's casual reveal. When Shawl had told him all that time ago that his skill level was around 50, who would have thought that he meant his lowest and weakest skills? As for his strongest skills, Spear Mastery was 302. Phantom Thrust was probably even higher. Randidly shivered. He couldn't help but smile when the knock came on the door to his room.
Disciple, come. We begin immediately.
At the very least, it wouldn't be boring. And being here reminded him, no matter how far he had already come, the path stretched ever onward.
Chapter 57.
This fucking asshole! The whole reason I ran away from home was to avoid the smell of leather. Now he makes me act like a common merchant. Could he somehow know?
The former star disciple of the heavy iron spear style sat still, his face studiously blank through Helen's relentless tirade. Although she had been extremely well-spoken around their master, for whatever reason, Helen continued her constant stream of mutters and hateful whispers around him.
I hate its fucking shit color. I hate its vomit smell. I hate so many people have touched it and how it's just mummified skin. Leather should be burnt and leather workers put to death.
Helen glanced at him, but seemed to see right through his carefully maintained facade. Her face twisted into a sneer.
But if you say anything about it, I'll bite your cock off in your sleep.
Her matter-of-fact delivery would have previously shaken him, but these past few days, he'd dealt with several blows to his ego, leaving him largely numb. This crazy woman's swarthy threats didn't really faze him. As she settled into her repeated rant, her fingernails scratched at the railing of the boat while their vessel continued to float unimpeded towards the center of Catal. He just sighed. 2 days ago, he'd been unshaken in his belief that he would change the world. Then he encountered not one, not two, but three individuals who made him feel inferior. By the time he regained consciousness, Helen had dragged him off the stage and used him and other wounded bodies as cover in order to hide herself from the vicious swarm of ravenous insects the ghost hound somehow summoned. By sheer luck, he'd been buried underneath Helen's other victims and made it out mostly unscathed. Any small joy he would have felt waking up on top of such a beautiful woman was swiftly wiped away by the horrifying realization of how many people and how quickly Helen killed from the surrounding crowd to make a pile of bodies she could hide under. It was likely done in a sneak attack, but still, if these people were taking part in the qualifier, they at least had some accomplishments in the art of the spear. That she casually dealt with so many was unnerving. He swiftly found himself with four individuals who he acknowledged as superior. But of course, at their head was the ghost hound, a mage who wielded the spear. It was a scary combination. There were some on the planet who chose to become mages, but they were mostly in support roles, strengthening spear users before and during battles. Or they became healers. But the offensive powers of the ghost hound's skills were no joke. They shook the former star disciple of the heavy iron spear style to his core. Then, promptly after he staggered out of the rapidly deserting arena, he had been waylaid by his former master, Egger, who publicly denounced him. He cast him out of the heavy iron spear style for publicly humiliating him and putting on such an embarrassing display as vomiting on his own spear. Adding one last insult on top of the heap balanced on his former disciple's psyche, Egger told him that he could keep the spear. After all, it had been sullied by his filth. For the first time in 3 years, he was styleless. Whereas he had previously seen his path to greatness laid out in front of him, now he wavered. Without access to the skill sets of the heavy iron spear style, becoming stronger on his own would be extremely difficult. Still, although he was lying low currently, his pride burned hot and angry in his stomach. He would persevere. He sought out that strong adversary who caused him such a great blow, because that was the strength he desired, the strength to defy expectations and shock the audience. Although he'd currently embraced his identity as the male spear attendant, that wasn't a permanent solution. This was just a transition phase. If nothing else, it was clear that both the ghost hound and his master were unusually strong. He swore that he would seize that strength, and rise higher than the heavy iron spear style could ever carry him. And then he could...
Hey, you two! Move aside! A cold voice spoke, and the two spear attendants jumped.
Divot cracked his neck.
It appears we finally have encountered our first guest. Now the only thing that remains to be seen is whose tassel they wish to plunder.
Helen bowed smoothly, making the male spear attendant's face twitch, but he controlled it, barely. That girl certainly switched personas quickly once there was an audience. Ahead of them, the path through the boats had been blocked. The boat in front of them was a small one, only a raft. But a bold, bright red tassel hung above three men and a woman. For several minutes, the two groups, the three on the boat with blue and emerald, and the four on the raft below the red tassel, glowered at each other as the two boats drifted closer. The male spear attendant realized the surrounding boats were filling with shifting crowds, whose eyes were locked on them. Neither said anything until the wooden boats rammed into each other with a soft knock.
As mine is the larger vessel, Divot said, his tone of voice making his superiority clear. I suppose the guests may come aboard.
The male spear attendant's face remained curious, but Helen snorted. The traditional greeting before a challenge was, honored guests. The fact Divot chose not to use it was either a slight, a comment on the difference in their social statuses, or on the difference in their strength. Considering the color of their tassel, it was possible to be all three. The expressions of the four from the smaller boat were stony, but they ascended up into a heavy silence. Divot seemed content to remain still. Finally, the man who appeared to be the leader among the red tassel group spoke.
It is unbecoming. They both bear the curse of that man, and that color is unbecoming.
Divot remained seated, not even opening his eyes. The man's eyes narrowed.
If you do not willingly lower your tassel,
then you will do what?
Divot opened his eyes and smiled. Randidly's chest heaved. Perhaps he meant to push himself off of his face, but his arms were pudding. They pooled and flopped helplessly. Mrs. Hamilton's exercises had been designed to allow Randidly to gradually push his body to its limits, forcing his will to rise to the level that he could fully utilize his physical capabilities. Shawl thought this was a weak and inefficient method.
True, your stats are higher than your level should possess, Shawl said, standing over Randidly's bruised and battered body. But it has made you bold and shallow. You have many flashy moves, yes. You have a runic rarity skill set, yes. But you do not have the weight of training behind your strikes. They are light like wicker. This is what you must learn, how to face foes who possess that strength. Rise and receive my spear.
Randidly, his arms almost buckling, managed to push himself up. That frosted fire pulsed in his chest. If nothing else, second wind, struggle, and bacterial regeneration were being well worked, even if he barely had enough time to use any active skills against Shaw's assault. Because when the attacks came, they were too much for Randidly to receive. Still, he tried, his body ever regenerating, his stance settling into its normal steadiness. Shaw smiled and disappeared. This was truly the difference in levels. Shawl's spear phantom's footwork was at a level where Randidly's eyes couldn't keep up. By the time he could catch where Shawl had gone, Shawl already attacked. This was not a way Randidly could survive. Instead, as soon as Shawl disappeared, Randidly stepped to, heading for the spot Shawl left. Immediately the hairs on the back of his neck stood up, and Randidly threw himself to the side, stepping with the skill as fast as he could manage it. It was not fast enough. And Randidly's ribs cracked under what could only be a spear packed with the strength of a freight train that smashed into his side. Sent tumbling, Randidly couldn't help thinking back to his experience all those months ago, right at the very beginning, knocked so casually aside. Although he wasn't yet the one knocking another so easily aside, he was still very different than his previous self. Randidly pirouetted on his toes, spinning around to regard his attacker. Shaul was already raising his spear, unrelenting, but not before Randidly lashed out, using Ghastly Slash, which, with the bonus of haste and power and mana strengthening, managed to arrive before Shaul's attack. Shaul's spear seemed to slither upwards, knocking Randidly's attack to the side, and then instantly lashed for Randidly's stomach. Using Phantom Half-Step three times in a row, Randidly opened enough space for the attack to miss. When he tried to find Shaul's figure, he realized he'd once more disappeared. Trusting an instinct, Randidly lashed out behind him, using Sweep to smash backwards. Shaul stepped around the attack like he was strolling through a park, and struck Randidly sharply in the shoulder, breaking the bone. His follow-up attack was even more vicious, ripping a large gash. Randidly gritted his teeth and stepped into it, throwing a desperate punch. Shaul became annoyed by this, and his spear ripped upward, cutting off half of Randidly's hand. Although it was painful, Randidly wasn't stopping now, not with the fire burning in his gut. Settling into those strange stances taught to him by the old turtle, Randidly settled his weight, took a deep breath, and threw a punch with all of his strength behind it. The butt of Shaul's spear whipped out, cracking the bones of Randidly's hand. But it still had enough force to continue onward and hit Shaul in the side. Within a split second, another blow descended, knocking Randidly to the floor. Shaul shook his head sorrowfully.
You do not know the value of a spear, so you easily toss it aside. A mistake. Without it, you are but desperate.
The ship rumbled, a strange wave of power spreading out from above. It was enough that Randidly tensed and sat up, even though his ribs protested painfully.
What was that?
Randidly asked. Shaul chuckled.
It is what happens when fools do not know their own strength. Ignore it and stand. Receive my spear, disciple.
Chapter 58.
Holy bitch, that was cool,
Helen muttered, and the male spear attendant was inclined to agree. The bodies of the challengers slipped silently below the waves, mostly in pieces. The tassels they carried sank into the sea, drifting out of sight. The opposing side's boat had been split in half, and was naught but kindling as their vessel continued to cruise forward. Divot hadn't even stood. From his sitting position, he acted with three spear attacks, with the backing of a powerful battle intent to help the weapon strike from afar. If this was the power level of the people on this boat, it was no wonder the Ghost Hound had grown as powerful as he had. If he now had time to train his spear skills up to a similar point, the male spear attendant couldn't even believe it.
Sir,
he started to say, but Divot shook his head.
Mine is not your path. I can offer you pointers in your training, but you have your own strength. For now, simply watch. It will be greatly beneficial to you.
Watch what?
The male spear attendant said, then flushed at how disrespectful his tone had been. Divot didn't appear to mind, and only cracked his neck.
They were truly trash. They wouldn't have stood in our path if there weren't other forces moving behind the scenes. More will come.
And I, sir? Shall I also watch? Helen said, stepping forward with a smile.
Divot chuckled.
Just try to control yourself, all right?
Helen's eyelid twitched, and the male spear attendant had to cover up his laugh with a cough.
30 brief, agonizing, and prolonged confrontations later, Shaul finally spoke to his downed form.
There, that is enough for a warm-up. Do not forget to continue practicing those strange base-building dances you obtained from the sister village. They are surprisingly suitable for strengthening your body. For now, follow me.
Shaul walked out of the training room and down the hall. Randidly hobbled after him, grunting slightly due to his only partially healed wounds. Shaul walked past Shaul's room to a locked door at the end of the boat. A simple hand press from Shaul caused the lock to click open, and Randidly followed him inside, seeing another rather large room, perhaps even larger than the training room. At the far wall, there was a strange glyph 3 meters wide on the ground. To the left, there was a small prayer mat and a scroll. To the right was a chest.
Before you lies the inheritance of the Spear Phantom style. Should you not die, someday it will be yours. There are tools here to advance your training, which you desperately need. But first, Shaw leveled his gaze at Randomly, we must speak about Aether. How have you become this strong without a class? Tell me.
After a brief consideration, Randomly decided to explain his suspicions that he could somehow produce his own Aether. Shaw had saved his life and continually helped him.
Perhaps this gesture was just that, a gesture, meant to loosen Randomly's tongue.
But Randomly couldn't understand why Shaw would care. Or, more truthfully, with the strength Shaw possessed, even if he did care, it was beneath his notice to do something about it, when it involved someone he viewed as poorly as his disciple. Randomly told the story of how he became strong enough to defeat a tribulation without the assistance of a village, and had forcefully suppressed that strange runic tongue, absorbing some of its magic in his body. He couldn't pinpoint the moment exactly, but that was roughly when the lava and frost power began to emerge in him. The tribulation, Randomly suspected, included a small ether spring. Ever since, he could feel it growing, pulsing within him, its tendrils spreading throughout his body. It appeared to have a very positive impact on the speed of his growth, so Randomly was thankful for it. But the strange energy filled Randomly with worry. After Randomly finished speaking, Shaw was silent for a long time. Then, ponderously, he said,
do not speak of this again. What you say is impossible. Aether seeps out from the world core and from villages. Above all, the Nexus is the source of liquid life. You cannot hold a source of aether within you.
Shaw's gaze held Randomly's for a long time, and there was a foreboding warning there. Although Shaw didn't know where the threat would come from, it was clear he didn't believe it prudent for Randomly to talk about this again. Randomly nodded, understanding. Then Shaw turned back to the room.
Let us speak generally of Aether. Its exact composition and formation is unknown, but one thing is clear. Aether begets Aether. In the beginning, there was but a speck. As people struggled and fought and channeled its power through themselves, it grew. That is why villages actively seek out strong individuals. As they grow in strength and pull more ether to themselves, they also generate increasing amounts of ether. They fight in the eternal war against whites and gather more and more momentum to themselves. Most of this ether is taken by the village as its toll for the strength that it has given them. But some remains. All ether is not created equal. Ambient ether is thin and wild, and is not amenable to any but the strongest image. You can sustain yourself on it, but it is difficult to grow with it. You have seen the Forsaken. Most of those have tried to subsist solely on ambient ether, for their entire lives. Meanwhile, village ether is purer, although it is thickened in a way, due to the obeisance you owe to the village you receive it from. It is easy to grow fat on this ether. Grow strong, but the thickness of it resists being made into powerful images. Creating your own skills from such ether requires extraordinary willpower. Rewards from killing raid bosses and dungeon bosses is also this type of ether, although that thickness results from the bosses themselves, so it is slightly more desirable. The purest form of ether, the most easily manipulatable, so that you might grow along your own path, is that ether you earn for yourself through toil. The little that lodges itself in your body, slowly pooling in your organs as you struggle. That is the wanting. When you want ether, it exists. At your level, it is but a fraction of a hair, but... Shaw walked to the sigil and carefully inspected it. After a few seconds, he gestured for Randomly to enter. This is a formation that was constructed by my father at great personal cost. Like a dungeon, it weakens the connection of those inside to their village through a mild time acceleration formation. It will only give you about a times 2 dilation, but it suffocates the ether from villages.
It also disperses ambient ether, so the only ether remaining to you is the ether within yourself. My father used this to eliminate the impure ether inside of him and create the skill set that earned him the name Spear Phantom. He created all 6 moves in a single sitting over 6 days. To this day, it remains an impressive feat. Shaw flexed his hand, and a huge black spear appeared. It was formed of obsidian and almost 3 meters long. Although this is ostentatious, its balance is true, and its power should not be trifled with. Train with this. What you need is repetition, to find the image you need for your moves. Search for it. As your body is starved from outside ether, you will discover your own path.
Randidly took the spear and teetered. The weight was ridiculous. Based on how trivially Shaul held it, his physical stats must be staggering. It was no wonder he didn't need to rely on skills to crush him.
So much for my stats being impressive. It's just because I'm fighting against other apprentices that I have an edge. I will deactivate the formation in an hour. There is one other tool here you may use, but first you must know this peculiarity. Good luck.
Pressing down with his hand, Shaul caused the runes of the glyph to slowly light up. A fog rose and faded away. Randidly turned around, curiously, but everything faded to darkness. All he could see was the glyph beneath him, lighting up the thick fog that rose to his calves, seeming to spread infinitely in every direction. Shrugging, Randidly hefted the spear and got to work. To his mind, there was only one choice, Phantom Thrust. That was the foundation of all his techniques. It was the first offensive move Shaul taught him. In the strange half-gloom, he began to thrust again and again. After a few minutes of this, Randidly decided to summon a root spider so he didn't disturb the formation underneath him, and then created a root avatar with root control on top of it. Satisfied, Randidly did this 3 more times. He began to fall into a familiar rhythm of breathing, striking, adjusting his form. All the while pondering what Shaul said about ether and images. If the source of the ether influenced the image, wouldn't that mean his ether, if it really came from a spring inside of him, would already be predisposed towards his images? Wondering whether the 4 individuals connected to him by the unique skill could also benefit from his mysterious source of ether, Randidly continued to use Phantom Thrust. Whereas Randidly had previously focused on speed and suddenness, Shaul's use helped him realize that would come with time. The increased skill level would naturally add speed and weight. What he needed to do with his image was not to address execution, but flavor. And then he had to want it, powerfully desire that image. First, while he considered these things, he needed to work through the ambient ether in his body. Randidly felt slightly stupid doing so, because for a long time nothing happened. He just trained. It wasn't boring, but it was frustrating, because Randidly wasn't sure what he was waiting for. Was it perhaps impossible for him to receive the benefit of this formation due to that tongue he absorbed from the Sphinx? Still, he persevered, and after around 40 minutes, he felt it. A strange tightness in his chest, like his lungs couldn't inhale as much oxygen as they had previously. It wasn't an oxygen problem. His body started to tremble slightly as he continued. His body urged him to hyperventilate, but Randidly squashed that instinct. After all, it would do nothing to address this problem. Just when he started to feel woozy and began to wonder whether he had taken this too lightly, the ether in his chest pulsed, softly at first, then with increasing fierceness, fighting back the weakness. Waves of ice and fire surged outward, making all of Randidly's limbs tingle. Every breath he took now was like plunging his chest into a frozen river and then hopping out onto a bed of coals. His body began to sweat, unused to the strange sensation. Although it was extremely distracting, Randidly tried to ignore the sensations of the ether moving within him, thrashing around his body. He raised his spear once more. The image. Forward. Always forward. Without relenting, his path was his own, and he needed to walk it. Granted the thrust, and the ether within him thrummed. The sensation intensified, and there were pins and needles of ice sliding in and out of the muscles of his arms and shoulders. The thrumming grew stronger and stronger, and seemed to howl. Forward, forward, forward. As his head began to pound, Randidly let the root avatars fall away, and just concentrated on his spear, imbuing every inch of it with his will. That strange hazy green energy formed around it, which he believed was his battle intent. He ignored that for now, focusing solely on the spear. That image of advancing, it was a little unrefined. Randidly closed his eyes and pictured Shawl's phantom thrust, not the speed nor the power, but how the spear in his hand always seemed to be thrusting, how the thrust was inevitable, how it would advance no matter the cost. The ether continued to thrum, and the pain in Randidly's forehead continued to grow. Thrust, thrust, thrust. Sweat ran rivers down his face and back, but Randidly didn't notice. He closed down all of his sensory information, ignoring it all, trying to avoid the chaotic ether within him, focusing on the feeling of that huge spear in his hands.
Chapter 59.
Shawl purposefully lied to his disciple. He would not be within the formation for a single hour, but for 6 hours. Physically, he was a fine specimen, and at this juncture, Shawl needed to know his mentality was up to the challenges that would be laid before him in the tournament. For his disciple, this would be 12 hours of hell. Well, if he chose that path. If he was cautious, 12 hours was about the amount of time it took to deplete the ambient ether in your body if you were not exerting yourself. The benefits of this 12-hour period was twofold. First was to force the boy to confront his own ether, and push him beyond the point his body could stand. This would have tremendous positive benefits for his training, if he could harness that sensation and learn to accumulate and identify his own natural power, especially if what he said was true, and that somehow he was a walking village in terms of ether. What would that mean for his ability to use an image to shape ether? Even Shawl, who long assumed his heart had stiffened and died in a way, felt some inkling of excitement. If he was really carrying this blessing, his disciple needed to get as strong as possible before others discovered it, and it became a curse. Such was the bloodthirsty way of the world. If your gift was too precious, it would be torn from your grasp by your worst enemies and used against you. Another wave of power exploded on the deck above. Shawl disregarded it. Develtian should have no trouble dealing with enemies who came this hastily after them. He was one of the few spear users who hadn't received any status designations from the school, but Shawl's father had still treated the old man with respect. Shawl knew in his heart that Develtian was far above the level of the common artisan. Katal was not a town that could easily push Develtian around. Even if the Forsaken descended into one of their hunger swarms, he would be able to handle them. The second reason Shawl put his disciple into the formation for a longer time was cold and calculating. He said it multiple times, but his disciple did not seem to get it. The enemies that would come would be far above his level. His disciple acquired some tricks and had a knack for survival, but at their strength, he wouldn't have that chance to experiment and outsmart. He needed a reliable weapon. Ideally, his disciple would find a powerful image of the spear, and then they could scour Tellus for some extra time to perfect it. This 12-hour period would give him the best chance to develop a powerful image. Although there was also a high risk of death, Shawl was not one to worry over much. If his disciple was too weak, it was better he die now, before Shawl risked overmuch to help him. For Shawl knew of an answer to the time dilation problem. It would be difficult, extremely so, and pose extreme risk, with Shawl bearing most of the risk. Even if it worked, Shawl might be completely out of commission for a long time. In the larger city they would need to visit to perform this path, both the people who resented the spear phantom style and rainbow hunters would be more common. Without Shawl's strength, Even he, who knew he was about the adept level of strength, felt some fear in his heart at the thought of such weakness. But Shaul's eyes burned as he stared into the formation. He was unable to see his disciple, and he wished very strongly for him to succeed. Not for this style, not for the health of his disciple, but due to a name he buried deep within his heart. Lucretia. And thanks to Egger, Shaul now had a location. His father's actions earned Shaul many things. Part of the settlement with the other schools was that the travel of the Spear Phantom style be restricted to only the area controlled by the Spearman school, who defended them. Shaul needed a reasonable ticket to leave their area. Like a disciple who was traveling to enter a distant tournament. It was almost a pipe dream at this point. His disciple struggled at the qualifier for the regional tournament. After that was still the regional tournament, where the true competitors will be waiting. At that tournament, the top four would get a ticket to the Spearman School Hall of Stances, and then those four, as well as the other groups of four from the other Spearman School regions, would travel to the all-school tournament, which was being hosted by the Death School during this five-year cycle. Top four, huh? It seemed impossible to Shaul, but his disciple had an almost infectious optimism about him. Besides, their current goal was top eight, anyways. Just one more win. However, this wasn't about honor of his style. This was a personal vendetta. Shaul wanted that ticket dearly. His eyes flashed in the dark hold of the ship. Lucretia, I've survived your damned dungeon, and now I'm coming for revenge. No matter how far you run, I will find you. Time dragged on, and everything became indistinct for Randedly. Everything except the spear. It all revolved around the spear. He saw it. Even with his eyes closed, it grew, and it grew distant, like the way your limbs felt when you sat alone in a dark room with your eyes closed. Randedly didn't let that perturb him. He simply held the spear and thrust it forward, ether writhing through his body as he moved. The thrust was inevitable. It was instant. Time. Randedly paused, hesitating. Time, huh? His mind moving rapidly, in spite of the vicious pain in his forehead, Randedly could picture his spear moving so fast it seemed to move slow, somehow bending the laws of time. Or rather, using it to speed up the time it took for his spear to arrive before his target. After a few seconds, he shook his head, banishing that image. That wasn't his spear, it was inevitable. It wasn't that his spear used time to its advantage, but that the attack was inevitable and irresistible, like time. It was coming. It was just a matter of time. There was a countdown. Randedly thrust out again, his spear speed much slower than it was previously. The ether inside of him quivered, as if confused. In fact, it was possible his spear actually hurt him with its image of time, trading off the unpredictability and speed for power. Randedly thrust again, the spear slowing even further. As he did so, he instinctively felt the attack resembled a phantom, drifting and slow, sure, but when it arrived, as the thrust was fully extended, the air seemed to hum with violent power. Randedly drew the spear back and thrust again. It was almost as if time let the enemy know far in advance that it was coming. The air hummed, but it was an unstoppable force. When it arrived, the air crackled and hissed. Again and again, Randedly thrust, and the ether inside of him began to move in a more purposeful manner. Where before it was icy needles, now it was like an inexhaustible furnace within his chest, belching out smog and heat. His body beginning to feel hot, his head fuzzy. He forced himself to continue, thrusting again and again. Only through repetition of this feeling would he find his answer. Randedly wasn't sure how much time remained to be in here, and wasn't sure whether it was having an effect on gaining skill levels, but it certainly was doing something to his ether, and that something was narrowing his focus to a razor edge. Even as his insides began to feel bone dry and as inhospitable as a desert, Randidly thrust, his spear now making strange crackling noises as it exploded with force. His eyes glowing emerald, Randidly felt the image, the inevitable nature of time. It approaches, sweeping us all away. It affects us all. It is the strongest weapon, the sharpest spear. Randidly's chest was a burning volcano. The ether bubbled within him, mixing and swirling in strange shapes. It was almost unbearable, the pain approaching the level of having Shawl dump acid inside his body. Randidly slowed, thoughtful. It seemed at present he reached the limit of what he could do with this image, and it was probably a bad idea to continue to refine this without first checking with Shawl. Randidly didn't want to proceed too far down an incorrect path, and while he was still within the focused state. Before anything else, Randidly sat for a few minutes and let the thundering in his head subside a bit. The ether continued to roil around in him unpleasantly, but without him focusing strongly on something, it just seemed to flail, almost listless. After a suitable amount of time, Randidly stood and began to move through the strange stances taught to him by that old turtle. At this point, Randidly could persist through one complete circuit of the first exercise and almost all the way through the second. The third was still far beyond him. Still, ether swirled lazily down into his legs, feeling like a cool, refreshing stream, driving away the exhaustion. Randidly could see what he wanted. The image he had since the turtle had done this. It was one of the first things he gained from the system. Roots. Randidly pictured his legs as ineffable roots, thick and durable and sturdy, glowing golden with life, so strong it seemed they would never be shaken. Roots so large they supported a tree formidable enough to hold up the sky. That was the strength he wanted. Privately, in his mind, he said the word that described what the tree would be. Yggdrasil. His legs, his base, would be the roots that could hold up Yggdrasil, the world tree. That was what he sought. That strength. With it, even if his spear skills were below his opponent's, he would not falter. He would not struggle. His base was endless. His roots stretched so deeply into the earth beneath him, he could not be shaken. Energy and life flowed upwards, giving him substance. He would be eternal. Randidly smoothly moved from the first movement to the second one, his legs beginning to tremble. Ether surged downward, an ice-cold river that would grab you and pull you under, the kind parents warned their children away from. As he focused on these huge golden roots, Randidly moved through the second movement, the shaking getting worse. Despite his chest heaving and large drops of sweat dripping down his face, he didn't cease the awkward body movements, skittering and scuttling, working every part of his thighs and hips. Like a crashing wave, he finished the second movement and began the third. He struggled onward for several seconds. The ice-cold ether sloshed around his legs, swirling and probing, drawing sigils. But then the wave ran out of momentum and sloshed backwards. Randidly collapsed, but he was laughing. "Just a bit more," he muttered. "Just a bit longer. I know I can take that step." Chapter 60. Shawl opened his eyes, putting his thoughts to the side. It was nearly time. It was impossible to see what was happening through the thick formations that choked off all outward sources of ether, so it was possible the disciple had foolishly spent his ether early on, and had since died. His body would be perfectly preserved, but the spark of his life... It would be a disappointment now. Ashal had spent this time gathering his thoughts for how they could manage to pull this off, and how he could convince Develtian to lend them his aid. With his help, it was possible. For the first time in a long time, Shaw felt a pang of regret that so many bridges had been built and then burnt by his father. Very few of their older allies remained well disposed towards them. They would effectively be on their own, without the aid of any local powers. Sensing time was up, Shaw prepared to lower the formation.
"Thank you, Senior," the male spear attendant said, bowing. "It was truly helpful to see your strength."
Divot snorted.
"No need to flatter, but fine. I suppose I could give you some pointers from time to time. Assume a stance."
Excited, the male spear attendant did so. Very carefully and slowly, Divot explained what he knew of the heavy iron spear style, its strengths and weaknesses, and what he saw in the male spear attendant. Honestly, the amount of information and insight he so casually displayed was incredible. Then, even more incredible, Divot began describing an image and movement that could possibly turn into a great skill if he had a spare skill for it. The male spear attendant nodded excitedly.
"Then all that remains," Divot said, "is to strike. Focus on the image, feel its truth in your body, and move. If you want it enough, the world will respond."
The male spear attendant raised his spear and hesitated. He tightly pressed everything that shook his confidence these past few days and bound it into a ball. Then he maneuvered that ball of compact emotion and put it in the tip of his spear. An iron defense and impenetrable strike. A split second before the male spear attendant moved, a very peculiar thing happened. A strange, chaotic burst of energy came from below, thick and wild. It rampaged upwards and everywhere, sinking into the bodies of everyone on the ship almost immediately, filling them up with a powerful ferocity and focus. Eyes bright with confidence, the male spear attendant struck, his spear smoothly rushing forward. For whatever reason, with that energy filling him, he could feel the image, a fortress of invulnerable iron. Although many have tried to raise it, they would only crash against it and fall away.
"Bulwark of iron!"
he shouted, his cry clear and bright.